This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Do you take this woman as your lawful wedded wife?
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring...
With this ring...
I thee wed...
I thee wed...
And welcome to the third edition of the With This Ring podcast. I am Ryan Everett, along with my wife.
Hi, I'm Cindy Everett.
And tonight, we have a sort of a two-episode
arc.
Yes, that we will be going over. And what we'll be doing is looking at matches that came before their WrestleMania matches. In most cases, they're more famous matches at WrestleMania. There's one or two matches where you could argue that the first match was at least as important or famous as the WrestleMania match that followed. But for the most part, any time a match is at WrestleMania, it's
automatically going to be bumped up in terms of exposure.
Right, exactly. Yeah, even like there's one match at the SummerSlam, which is usually the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, and then that match is at WrestleMania. So it's still... That's kind of neck and neck, but there's some that the difference is very noticeable.
Right. There's one I'm thinking about in particular that we watched.
Yes. So we'll do this chronologically.
Okay.
I think that's how you like to do it the most.
Sure. I think I'm still kind of getting into a routine.
Right. Yeah. We're still.
Because we don't watch them in chronological order. Maybe we should start
doing
that.
We should probably maybe start doing that.
That
might help
a
lot. Also, yes. But also, it depends on time of matches, I think, sometimes when we watch.
True.
So that does also affect it. But yeah, so chronologically, we'll look at a match from March 15th, 1987, at the Maple Leaf Gardens. It is an Intercontinental title match between the champion, Randy Savage, defending against...
Ricky Steamboat.
Yes, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Ricky the Dragon.
Yes, don't forget that he's the dragon.
Right.
So, in this match, as the match started, I went back on the DVD that we were on and showed you the beginning of this feud where they were fighting each other on the normal Saturday morning show.
Saturday morning show.
Yeah, that's how wrestling was back in the day. It was a Saturday morning show, Sunday morning show, Monday night. But Saturday and Sunday were actually where, like, the new stuff happened. And primetime wrestling on Monday night was the actual, like, it was kind of like the collection of both of them together.
Almost and we like show, like, the highlights.
Yeah, and that was Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan.
Oh, interesting.
We were watching a little bit yesterday with Harry, actually.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's usually on.
Yeah, it's always on in the background at some point. So they were having a match, though, and Randy Savage got frustrated that he couldn't beat Ricky Steamboat, so he put his throat over the guardrail and hit a double axe handle onto the guardrail, then threw him in the ring and dropped the ring bell.
That's at the ring bell, yeah.
Yes, over
his throat.
So,
a little excessive.
Well, Randy Savage does things to the excess.
That's true. That is true.
He is called the Macho Man for a reason.
Right, and that's indicative of his kind of character, so to speak. Yeah.
So, and... And at first, they were saying that Ricky Steamboat would never talk again.
Right.
And he needed to go to a speech doctor. I think those are in the build-up to the match that even this match was building itself to. We will see some of those skits, which are great, with Ricky Steamboat learning to talk again.
Well, good for... They have a montage video of him learning to talk again?
Yeah, kind of. It's included, because really... It didn't matter if he could talk again, because he wasn't that great of a talker beforehand. It's all about whether
and
or not...
It's all part of the act. It's
right.
Not like he really had to go to a speech pathologist.
So, this match itself takes part, like I said, the Maple Leaf Gardens. I had it open before. I don't know. So, it's only 13 minutes.
I believe it.
What did you think of it off the bat?
If I look at my notes, I said... it starts with a very frenetic pace. I think the whole setup of that place is kind of throwing me off.
Yeah.
It has the ramp that connects directly to the ring. The guardrails were really, really close. So anytime
they were
knocked
yeah,
out of the ring, yeah. it just really didn't really go anywhere because there was literally nowhere to go.
Yes.
I thought, though, that they were, both, it was well matched. They're both very athletic. They both had a lot of good moves off the ropes. I liked it. Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there.
Okay, now, a little off topic, but do you remember watching the Macho Man DVD, the story of the Macho Man?
I think that was when we lived in our old apartment,
right? Yeah.
So it was about 5 years ago.
Do you remember what... Ricky Steamboat talked a lot about this
match. Oh, was that the one he was like, oh, we planned it,
yeah,
it was so great.
Yeah, so that was the
big... Is that the one we watched?
Yes.
Oh.
So, well, that was the build-up to the one. The one we're going to watch is WrestleMania 3.
Is that the one that he was talking about in the DVD commentary?
Yes.
So okay, yeah.
This is the one where he said... Like, because back in the day, it was... Like, Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat wrestled for like 8 years almost every night, and they never planned anything. They called it in the ring, as they say. But Randy Savage was the opposite of that. He wanted everything planned out, move for move. So that's what they did for this match. And they planned it out like in January. And then for 2 months on the road, they would do these like pieces of the match, basically.
Huh. Oh, like practice almost?
For move. Basically practice, yeah. Which is, it's kind of weird because for a while, back in the day, house shows were the main business.
Okay, so it was like the dress rehearsals.
Yeah, and this is when pay-per-view was starting to be the actual business.
Mm.
And house shows were secondary. So what they would do is they'd have this match as the main event at house shows leading to the pay-per-view match.
Got it.
Whereas before it would be after a match happened on pay-per-view, they'd have the resulting matches at the house show. So this was kind of, for like... 2 months, basically, they did this match practicing to make sure it was so good on pay-per-view.
Gotcha.
So,
well, I think they succeeded. I thought it was really good. I was thinking about that, actually, when we were watching that match, but I wasn't sure if that was the one they were referring to.
Referencing to, yeah.
Because it was, to a certain degree, choreographed.
Well, yeah, it's choreographed for sure, like with some of the pin reversals and stuff. It seems a little performative, but at the same time, it's so you look at it and you say, that's a pretty good match. But in 1987, it was like the WrestleMania match that we're going to see is called like the greatest match of all time.
Oh, okay.
Because it's just so much different from everything that was happening at that time. So that's kind of one of the things with this list is when you're making it, you got to compare like, a match from 1988 isn't going to be as athletic maybe as a match from 2017, but comparatively, like, how do you weigh those things?
Right, yeah, it's hard to take context.
It is, and that's kind of where, like, you have to add points to the storyline if they have something, and whereas, so this match, it's a storyline that built since November the previous year, whereas there might be a great match on Raw, but it built for 2 weeks.
Gotcha.
And it's forgotten the next week. Whereas even after the match happened, this storyline continues to grow and grow.
Okay, well, that's good hype for when we watch the WrestleMania match.
Exactly, yes. That's all
I'm
doing.
See what you're doing here.
Just hyping it up, yeah.
No, I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I put it at a 9.5.
You're rating a lot of things in the 9 to 9.
Well, I think, like, for the most part, to get on the list... You have to be about a 9.
Okay.
On the
so
top
really,
100.
Really, so you're really your ranking is between,
basically 9 to 10, 9.0 to 10.
And are you doing in tenths? That's like in tenth increments, like 9.1, 9.2?
A few times I have.
Okay.
For the most part, I try to stick to
0.2,
a quarter points.
Okay.
Because that's kind of breaking it down more, but at the same time, it's kind of like how much... What's a 9.7 to a 9.3?
Right.
Like, what's the difference? And that's kind of like what you have to do, though, when you're ranking the top of the top, the best of the best.
Yeah, you have to get very granular.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, from there, Oh, well, actually, we'll get to your fun fact a little later.
Yeah, I want to talk about Maple Leaf Garden tandem with the Air Canada Center.
Right, yes.
I actually read an interesting story about them earlier today.
Quite the interesting history together. Next, we will be going to Survivor Series 1996, where we saw just a match, nothing.
Just a match.
Steve Austin versus Bret the Hitman Hart. This is Bret Hart's first televised match since WrestleMania 12 in March.
Right.
He had matches like on house shows, mainly overseas, like because they, with those overseas tours, they promote them for like almost a year. And it would be like, including Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. Gotcha. So Bret Hart had to go and wrestle on those. And most of those he actually wrestled Steve Austin.
Gotcha.
Because Steve Austin, when he came up, he wasn't pushed like as a main eventer, but everyone knew he was such a good wrestler that he was wrestling Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels like in the main event of house shows that were non-televised, but they'd see like all these matches with hillbillies for 2 hours.
Right, and then scrubs, yeah.
And Steve Austin would come out and wrestle Shawn Michaels or Bret Hart for 30 minutes and tear the house down.
Yeah.
And eventually, June of 96, Steve Austin wins the King of the Ring, starts building momentum. And then when Bret Hart came back, and he says it in the interview where he comes back, he says, if I'm come back, I want to wrestle the best. And right now the best is Steve Austin, which is obviously a storyline to set up the match, but also was supposedly what he felt like.
Yeah.
He felt Steve Austin or Shawn Michaels, but he hated Shawn Michaels for a myriad of reasons, but he wanted to face Steve Austin because he thought Steve Austin was the best.
Right. And that seems to track. He did rise very quickly.
Yes. Yeah. So this match goes 24-41, and right the morning of the match, at least on WWE LiveWire, the wrestling the show at the that happened the day of the pay-per-view, they added the stipulation that it was for the number one contender
title
at the next pay-per-view. And Bret Hart defeats Steve Austin. Do you remember how he beat him?
I do not have that. Oh, I don't have it written down. No, I don't know.
Okay, so...
Sorry, I can't recall everything in the exact detail.
Does he beat him with his sharpshooter, his finishing submission move?
No,
he does not. So that's important to remember for, especially building to the WrestleMania
match. You're leaving me some clues here.
Yes, because Bret Hart's finishing move was the sharpshooter.
It's Natty's finishing move.
Yeah, of course, it's Natty's finisher, and she does it worse than The Rock does. But, so that's Bret Hart's finisher, and he tries it at one point, and Steve Austin, I think, rakes his eyes and then crawls to the ropes to make sure it's not put on. But then, and Steve Austin hits the stunner. But at that time, it wasn't, like, the finishing move of all finishing moves. And I think Bret Hart, like, kind of falls into the ropes or out of the ring when he hits it. So then Steve Austin, because he was brought into the WWF in storyline by Ted DiBiase.
Oh, okay.
As his manager.
Gotcha.
So he goes
wasn't in that match, though, was he?
He had been gone for a while.
Okay.
Like, but in May, he lost a match where that's kind of funny. Steve Austin lost the match to Savio Vega.
Don't know who that is.
Yeah. It was a rematch from a match because it's a pay-per-view.
Okay, we don't need to go too far down.
Yeah, because two down. But anyways, Steve Austin lost a match where if he lost, Ted DiBiase was thrown out of the WWF.
Oh, no.
So he lost it. And then in the weeks after it, Steve Austin kind of surmised to the public that he lost it on purpose because he didn't want to be managed by Ted DiBiase anymore. Kind of saying, like, I could have won the match.
Gotcha.
But I didn't want Ted DiBiase weighing me down.
HR department really cooks up some goofy contracts.
Yeah, well, hey, that's what... If you're in wrestling, you gotta be... You're an independent contractor also.
That's true.
You might be left on a tarmac in Saudi Arabia. You might... You never know what's gonna happen. So...
Are they back yet?
Yeah, they made it back.
Oh, okay, well, I don't know.
No, I understand it. If you're not reading certain websites, you don't know.
I'm not. I'm just... Yeah, you're my
it wasn't on our stock report. We don't know yet whether or not our stock... People important to our stock are in the country.
Did the shares of WWE go back up because they got out of the country?
No, it's a bad
Okay.
Bad stock.
Yeah, don't listen to us for stock picking advice.
No. But anyway, so Steve Austin has picked up the $1 million dream, Ted DiBiase's move, as like a finisher during that time, but he hadn't used it since he lost. But after the stunner didn't work, he went to that anyways, and Bret Hart kicked his feet off the ropes.
Yep.
And put himself on top of Steve Austin for the pin, and that got him the win. And after that, Steve Austin promised that he would never use the $1 million dream ever again because it cost him the match.
Obviously. No, I remember liking this match.
Yeah.
I remember it started kind of slow, but there wasn't a lot of aerial moves, but the ones they did, they really counted.
Yes.
And once again, both really good wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, both really athletic. Whatever, like, I guess athletic's not the right word for Steve Austin. Just,
no, I mean, I think athletic is, especially at this
well-rounded
point.
Well-rounded, yeah.
Because this is before he injures himself, and with Owen Hardy, and he had the broken neck that even you know
that's
about
right,
at this
yeah.
point. And that changed his style, but at this point, he was a wrestling, like, machine.
Yeah. Yeah, really the top of his game.
Yes, this really was.
So, no, yeah, I enjoyed this one. So I did find one fact off of the... Well, first of all, I'm going to run out of Madison Square Garden
yes,
facts.
Because
there's
we're
too many matches. But you sent me some bizarro Wikipedia for Kids article about Madison Square Garden. And the one fact that didn't really have a lot of context to it, but the website said that the seats... And once again, they didn't have any dates.
Right.
But at one point, the seats were kind of... The sections were like color-coded. So okay. It was six different sections. I think some stadiums still do that.
Yeah, I could... Kind of see that.
But according to the Kitty Wikipedia, that the Rangers fans only wanted to sit in the blue section. And they wouldn't let anybody else sit in the section that wasn't the blue seats.
So if you were a Devils fan,
you couldn't sit in the
blue seats.
You
could not sit in there?
Right.
Even if you were David Putty?
Probably not. You just sit in the red section.
Well, that makes sense if you're the Devils.
Right, right. But then essentially, because it was causing so many problems, they got rid of the whole
colors.
They made all the same color.
That's probably a good idea.
Right.
You don't want to anger Rangers fans.
Yeah, don't ask me too many follow-up questions because
there wasn't a lot of context for it.
There's not a lot of context. I mean, it was, like I said, like bootleg Wikipedia, so really yes. anybody could have added that
and
fact.
Also, for this match, one thing I want to add
okay.
is the crowd reactions.
They're good.
So, obviously, at this point, Steve Austin is the heel. And this is Bret Hart returning as a face, the conquering hero. He's come back. He's, you know, Rocky and basically any Rocky movie where he makes the comeback, he's ready to come back and
isn't that
fight.
Every Rocky movie?
Pretty much, except one. One, he's kind of just coming out of nowhere. And
right, he's not coming back from anything.
Right, he's yeah. coming back from poverty. That's actually most of the Rockies also.
Right.
But anyways, but the crowd reacts. They cheer for Bret Hart, but they cheer for Steve Austin a lot more than any time. And Vince McMahon even is in... Vince McMahon, announcer, not Vince McMahon, WWE owner.
Right, right.
Even says, as he comes out, I don't know why they love him, but they sure do. And listen to the reaction that Steve Austin is getting from this New York crowd. And I think that, like, kind of shows you in his mind.
You can hear the gears turning.
Yes,
and his,
the gears turning, and more important, the cash registers clicking is... Because they had just started selling Austin 316 shirts, which would go on
that
to be
very smart.
More money than isn't any that, shirt ever.
I was going
to
say,
possible.
Is that their number one seller?
Of all time, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it has to be. I was going to say maybe some shirt.
You do any research to back that up?
No, but I'm feel confident saying that.
Yeah, because, I wouldn't challenge you on that.
I mean, the only other shirts that, like NWO, but that's kind of been... re-released so many times, and Austin 316 has been re-released numerous times, different colors, different fonts, like mm-hmm. it's been re-released plenty of times also, but I think the original Austin 316 shirt is the highest selling shirt merchandise ever. And yeah. I know I've heard Jim Ross on his podcast has said there were times where they gave merchandise like, because in WWE, if you sold shirts, your merchandise, you'd get like a portion of
like
the sales
right.
per quarter.
Okay.
Steve Austin in 97 and 98 had $1 million per quarter
wow.
paychecks.
That's pretty nice.
For his shirt. So it was doing pretty well.
Yeah, we have to design a shirt like that.
Yeah, well, yeah.
$4 million shirt.
Yeah. Well, I think it was...
At least.
I think the typical deal on the contract is you get one... You get 4%. So you get...
I gotcha.
So if you sell a $25 shirt, you get a dollar. So do the math there of how many shirts were sold.
I'm going to count. I need my calculator to do
that. So moving on... Our next match was...
Oh, wait, no, you have to say that one. Where is that one on your list?
Oh, yes. So that is 9.8.
Okay.
Is almost as high as it can go just because of what comes after it, basically.
What do you mean?
The rematch that follows.
Wait, so then shouldn't the rematch have a higher score than this match?
It does.
Okay. So it must be a very, very high score.
Yes. So this, it's top 25...
Okay.
Maybe top 20. It's kind
of
right
in that range.
Yeah,
that's the thing, because you're rating everything between 9 and 10, so I have no sense of where they're going to be in your top 100. Okay, well, I think you should change it to say, like, your top 100 where it's going to fall.
Okay, well, I'm telling you right now,
gives me more perspective.
It's probably between 15 and 25.
Okay, that helps.
I think.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just thinking about, like, what are my 10s? A 10 out of 10. So those are all at least top 10, maybe top 15. If I'm...
Okay, you're pretty generous with your ratings.
I mean, you're talking about the whole history of the promotion, though. So it's not like I'm just watching Raw and saying,
that's
a 10, that's a 9.
Yeah, you of all people have quite the background knowledge
so
to
I think,
do this.
Like, if you're kind of saying buckets, so 1 through 15, let's say, are 10 out of 10.
Okay.
And then probably 15 through 30 are the 9.9 to 9.9. Sixes, let's say, where it's like there's just one thing holding it back.
So what's the one thing holding this match back?
I think it's just kind of like they could have gone a little bit harder. Like, I don't think watching, if I watched it that night, which that's a match, this is a match I watched in Scramble Vision.
Nice.
Which I'm not sure how familiar you are with that.
Vaguely.
So basically, in the 90s, if you had pay-per-view, well, if you had the cable box, you could watch pay-per-view channels, but it'd be scrambled.
Okay.
So you didn't actually watch the match. You basically heard the
it.
Match. So that was a match. The Survivor Series, I was not going to be able to order that.
Why not?
Too much money. No.
How much was it?
I think $30.
Okay. Yeah, 1996.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part back then, WrestleMania was about it.
But yeah.
And then a few times I was able to talk him into King of the Ring because that was the end of the school year.
Oh,
I got
great.
All A's.
Yeah.
How about it? And they didn't care. Sure, whatever.
Wore him down.
Yeah, basically. But so, yeah, Survivor Series, though, was not a hill I wanted to fight on. And so I listened to it in Scramble Vision, and then I rented it at Blockbuster, like, in January. And it was great, but, you know, by that time, on Raw every week they were having big time matches. So it kind of helped dull it a bit by the time.
Okay.
And then by the time I watched it where I could see it in full and actually appreciate it, it was 10 years later. So it's still a great match. But like the storyline and the visceral feeling you have at the moment is lessened.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I think that's a big part of this match compared to the rematch which we'll get to this coming week.
Okay.
Next, we go to Backlash, April 25th, 1999.
Yep, at the Providence Center, a.k.a. the Dunk.
Providence Civic Center.
Providence in the Civic Center, now known as the Dunk.
Yes.
Which is a great corporate partnership, by the way. I'm a big Dunkin' Donuts fan.
Obviously. So we have WWF Champion Stone Cold Steve Austin defending the title, although he doesn't come to the ring with the title, against The Rock. With Shane McMahon as guest referee.
Yep, power couple there. Steve Austin versus The Rock. Well, are they going to run as a ticket when they run from The Rock?
I would assume so. I don't see who else he could. I mean, for one thing, The Rock, a minority, you want to get that Texas vote.
Oh,
you get the rattlesnake on the ballot.
There you go. Perfect.
And then Steve Austin has his podcast every week to help, you know, run the campaign.
There you go, yeah.
I think it's a no-brainer.
Let's do it.
So... this is 1999. A lot of storyline going into
can
the
we,
match.
Yeah, can we swear on this podcast? So can we swear on this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of shit in this match.
Oh, yeah. So going into the match, what did you kind of gather from the pre-match video package, if you remember that.
Can you refresh my memory on the video package a little bit?
All right. Well, first, it starts with Steve Austin coming out. He won the title at WrestleMania 15.
Mm-hmm.
He beat The Rock. And he comes out the night after and says, after all the bullshit I've been through, I looked at this title last night and I said, nah, it ain't worth it.
Oh, that's right. There's a lot of nonsense. Didn't want, and there's like a fake title.
Well, he didn't want the WWE title.
That's right.
He wanted his belt, the Smoking Skull belt.
That's right.
Which,
this is kind of
when I win the lottery, number one thing on the ballot. I mean, not even the lottery. Anything over $1,000, it's $400. We're getting it.
Oh, so you've already looked into the cost?
Oh, very well aware. For like the last 20 years, I've known how much this would cost. But anyways, so he says that. And Vince McMahon had screwed him out of the title in September and said on Raw, like, the very place this title is going is over my fireplace. So he says that. And then, so the Raw after WrestleMania is in Hartford, I believe.
Okay.
Very close to Vince McMahon's house.
Oh.
As we...
That's right.
We drove around Greenwich. We didn't really see
his house. We don't
know
where he lived exactly.
We were close to it.
I'm sure the streets we drove on are the same streets that he's driven on at some
exactly.
point.
Yes, exactly. So we go to that Raw, and Vince McMahon, at the same time this is happening, The Undertaker is trying to kidnap Stephanie McMahon.
That's right. Yeah, that was
gratuitous. So he kidnaps her on this Raw, and so, and then eventually she gets saved by Ken Shamrock. It's a thing. So Steve Austin, or someone brings Vince the belt, and he just tells Shane, just bring him the belt, I don't care. And Shane's like, no, I'm not letting this die. So he gives the belt to The Rock.
Gotcha.
And then...
Yeah, I don't remember all that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so then The Rock challenges Steve Austin to a fight on a bridge, because two years earlier,
I remember that.
Austin has thrown The Rock's Intercontinental title belt into the river. Over the same bridge, or not over the same bridge, but a bridge nonetheless.
Well,
anyways, so then The Rock, Austin comes and starts fighting The Rock on the bridge. The Rock hits him with a fishing pole somehow.
That's right.
And eventually knocks him into the river.
Another thing you don't want to ask too many questions about.
Yes. So, and everyone presumes that by falling 20 feet off of a bridge, Steve Austin is dead. Or at least that's what The Rock says. So he holds a funeral for Steve Austin.
That's right. That's right.
And it's basically just to rip on Austin and calling everyone Trailer Park Trash.
Yeah.
And then he reveals that he has the belt still on. He did not throw it in the river.
Ooh.
And then Steve Austin comes up in his monster truck and runs over the
Rock's
Lincoln Town Car and The Rock's hearse that he rented for this. And then throws The Rock in the gravestone.
The
burial site.
That's right.
And then at the very end, Shane McMahon, who had announced himself as the guest referee, comes up and hits Shane McMahon, or hits Steve Austin with the shovel.
Why did Shane insert himself into this?
Well, because he was still with The Rock.
Oh, okay.
And then the big thing is, before the match, there's an interview where Shane McMahon in his referee gear says that he swears on his grandfather's grave that he will call the match down the middle. Does he call the match down the middle?
No.
No, exactly.
No.
So that leads to the ending.
Yeah.
So the match overall, what did you think?
At first I was like, okay, there's a lot going on. And then it was like, there was too much. It like crossed over into like the excessive realm.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought there was a little... They go to the entranceway and brawl there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how...
They're all over the place.
I like how the one time The Rock whips Austin into the entranceway, that brings down the one half.
Oh, right.
Austin whips Rock into the other one, it brings down the other half. And then I thought that fighting by the entranceway went on a little bit too long.
Yeah, there was the fire extinguisher, there was the chain link fence, there was the cables, there was a lot of props.
Yeah, and that was fine. That's kind of what you expected then.
Yeah.
But it went a little too long, I would think. What did you think about the people's camera, where the Rock showed the crowd and then it shows the stunner?
Yeah, I thought that was good. Like once you kind of accept it for what it's going to be, it's not going to be like a technically clean
match.
It's just going to be a little bit of a hot mess.
Yeah.
He got the camera, he got the microphone. Yeah, I wrote lots of shenanigans through the Spanish announcement table, as per usual.
Yes. And then through the English table as well.
That's right. They're both.
Yeah, they go through both.
I guess as the kids would say, it was very extra.
Yes, yes, but it was.
I could see for a certain demographic of people.
Yes.
Like white teenage boys in 1999.
White teenagers that were 13?
Yes, yes.
Just to pick a random age.
I think that I could see how they would be very much impacted by this and very much like a, you know, invested in this storyline.
That's like the Attitude Era was very good in its time and place. And
right, yeah, I think we talked about that in one of our earlier
episodes. Yeah, I think last week we talked about how the Attitude Era.
It's very specific.
Yes, it is.
Now that I've. And it's interesting because it definitely made me appreciate the Steve Austin Bret Hart match even more.
Right.
After seeing
how very technical
chaotic
yes.
that one was, that it was like, okay, this actually was the 1996 Survivor Series one. Just looks like a much cleaner fight.
Yes, I would agree. So, and then at the end of this, Austin hits the Rock with the belt, I believe, and covers him, and Shane McMahon counts two,
and
then gives him the middle bird, and Vince McMahon comes out with his own referee, very upset at this, because he had just sworn on Vince's father's grave, that he called him, so he punches Shane out, and then disperses another ref into the match.
Dispatches,
I guess, and Austin hits, I think he hits the Rock with the belt and a stunner, and the Rock perfects his overselling of a stunner by like flipping all the way over.
Right.
And Austin gets the pin, gets both the regular WWE belt and the Smoking Skull belt. But the night is not over because what happens? We cut to the back.
Yeah, in a very, once again, gratuitous scene for me, which didn't really hold any relevance. You see Stephanie McMahon in the back of a limo.
Yes.
And then she's trying to talk to the driver, and the driver rolls down the partition. It's...
Where to, Stephanie? Ha! Yes, the Undertaker shows up and kidnaps Stephanie, and that leads to the next night on Raw, where the Undertaker holds a black wedding.
Oh.
Marrying Stephanie McMahon before, of course... Well, first, Ken Shamrock shows up. He gets beat up by the Undertaker's group. Then the Big Show shows up. He... beats up the Undertaker's group, but then gets hit by the baseball bat by the Undertaker. And then Steve Austin shows up, and of course he saves the day.
Right.
And he...
Look, that just seems so, like, to me right now, in 2019, seems so stupid.
Well, it was, but at the time...
I know. Everyone loved it. You can't really judge on today's standards.
Yeah, like, nowadays everyone's like, oh, there's no storyline. But, like, if you were to say, this crazy murderous redneck is going to show up and stop a zombie wizard from having a black wedding with the owner of the company. And you don't attach any names to that. You just say that.
Pitch that.
That sounds like the stupidest fucking thing ever.
Right.
But back then it was drawing record ratings. And even
people
that wanted to watch, you know, wrestling, like watch matches and good stuff, they would say that last segment on Raw was... great storytelling, but it's all about the characters that you've built.
That's not true.
You can't just dive into it. That's why, like, everything in 98 through 2000 is very, you need the context around it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. What year was Nixon impeached?
That was 74, I believe.
Oh, okay, so it's before then, because the Providence Center... Civic Center opened on November 3rd, 1972.
Oh, okay.
And Nixon was in town, and he was invited. He decided, nah, I don't want to go.
No point.
Okay, because I was trying to think when he got impeached, because maybe, or when he resigned, because I couldn't quite remember if by that point in time he was already out of the public.
No, because he won the 72 election.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
And I think it was 74 he was impeached.
Okay.
I don't think it was 74.
So he just didn't want
to
go.
Yeah, he had no desire to. I guess he was probably pulling good in Rhode Island anyway, because it was a landslide victory.
Right.
There was no point for Watergate.
Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, he was going to win anyways. It's just...
Yeah, that's what I got about the Providence.
When you're very paranoid, though, you can never be too sure.
Yep.
Okay, so for that match, I have it as a 9.
Oh, a 9, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a low rating, but... there's a lot of Austin Rock matches.
I kind of understand that, why. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of Austin Rock matches high. And I still think this will probably be 80 to 100. Okay. Kind of in that range. Because it's, I still liked it. And like, 99, we will end up watching a lot of matches from 99, 2000, 98. But pretty much every match we watch from there will be on my list.
Gotcha.
Because also, like, Backlash 99, there's 8 matches, let's say. This is the one good match.
Fair enough.
And they put, like, Vince Russo, the guy I've talked about before, the booker there, it seems like he put all his power into that one.
Match. He definitely put a lot in that.
Yes.
So that doesn't surprise me.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm not making a list, but this would be lower on my list.
Yeah. Of course, we want to remind you that we have plenty of great content on both podcast feeds here at the Place to Be Nation. The Place to Be Nation pop feed includes the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the longest running weekly episodic comic podcast in all of the Place to Be Nation, featuring Greg Phillips and Nick Duke, the DC For You, an in-depth look at the world of DC Comics with Russell Sellers and Todd Weber,
Laugh in Theater, a live watch comedy movie podcast hosted by Andy Atherton, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, where siblings Kevin and Mary are reliving the classic sitcom The Office episode by episode. Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I knew you would get jealous at that one and start thinking of sitcoms that we can rewatch episode by episode. There's also The Great Debate, a podcast where Andy Atherton leads a panel through a series of arguments and topics far and wide. This week they did toppings on hot dogs being sauerkraut or relish, which if you bring it to someone in Chicago, there'd be...
What's the argument?
Like, which one would you prefer? Obviously, some people would argue that that's only scratching the surface, but it's a good podcast nonetheless. The Glenn Butler podcast, Spectacular, brings you deep thoughts from the minds of Glenn Butler and his family and friends. We met Glenn Butler at the SummerSlam 2016. He was at the German Beer Hall.
Very nice. We have This Week in the NFL. Cowboy and D'Amato take you through recaps and previews of each week of the NFL season.
We have the NBA team with Adam Murray and Andrew Reach covering the world of hoops from coast to coast.
And The Year in Pop, a deep dive into pop culture year by year, hosted by Andy Atherton, Scott Carusculo, Dr. G and D'Amato.
And then heading over to the Place to Be Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed includes the Place to Be podcast, The Mothership, where it all started, with JT Rosero and Scott Crisciolo, taking you chronologically through the history of the WWE, the Place to Be main event with Scott Crisciolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey, breaking down all of the current events in the world of wrestling.
Wrestling Warzone, a podcast retrospective reliving the iconic Monday Night Wars, brought to you by Jay-Z and Chad Campbell.
And that's where they look at Raw and Nitro from the same night and sort of break it down and say which one was better that night. And the early ones, it's pretty much all Nitro being better because they were actually taking it to Raw and Vince McMahon didn't know what was going on at first. And then Row 1, Seat 1 is a look inside the world of small town wrestling and beyond with host Ben Zanny welcoming a variety of guests each week.
Talking WCW heads to Center Stage Theater, where Tim Capel, Greg Phillips, and Jennifer Smith pay tribute to the legendary promotion from the Dirty South.
They're looking at certain WCW wrestlers. Each one picks a match and goes over it and picks which one they think was the best. The Extreme Three-Way Dance takes you back on a trek through the land of Extreme with JT Rosero, John D'Amato, and Jennifer Smith. So it's looking at ECW and its history.
Body Press Your Luck, a brand new wrestling podcast game show hosted by JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan.
Yes, so that's coming up soon. It's not yet on there, but I think one of us will be on there pretty soon.
One of us. I wonder which one.
Who knows? And don't forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture.
Check out a brand new podcast feed brought to you by our very own Jennifer Smith. The Jenny Position can be found on Podbean, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher app. It will be the new home to Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, and lots of fun new content.
And if you're doing any of your online shopping this Christmas holiday season, make sure at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps you out at PTBN with no cost to you, just a little kickback to the site to help pay all the bills of the very high salary
high members. Rolling world.
Yes, yes.
High
yes.
rollers.
I mean, that's why we're doing it.
Right.
Check out our social media page and message boards at www.bigelow34proboards.com for information on joining GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list. And Cindy, let's get to our list.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so moving on, our next match is... Yes.
2000?
Is SummerSlam 2000, August 27th, 2000, at the Rally Entertainment and Sports Arena, which is now known as the
PNC Arena.
Yes.
I'll tell you right now, I didn't find anything interesting about it.
Okay, yeah. So I will say,
nondescript.
The one thing I found not really interesting, but I didn't know when looking at it, was that the Carolina Hurricanes actually play there. Which, okay. I mean, because Carolina, it's always kind of a weird thing with their sports teams.
Right.
They're like the very Panthers. Vague. The Panthers are the same way. And I just assume any team in the Carolinas plays in Charlotte. But
not true.
The Carolina Hurricanes actually play at the PNC Arena, the Rally Sports Entertainment Arena. So,
yep.
Anyways, so the main match that we looked at, or the match we looked at, was... the first ever TLC match for the WWE titles. It goes 18 minutes, 38 seconds. Edge and Christian defeated the Dudley Boys and the Hardy Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So before we... So first, these three teams... Well, the two teams, the Hardys and the Edge and Christian, yeah, we watched them in our first episode.
Yeah, and that was the first ever
tag team ladder match. And then at WrestleMania that year, WrestleMania 2000, they wrestled... a triple threat ladder match with these three teams.
Okay. Wait, triple threat ladder versus TLC, so it's just ladders?
No, it's just ladders.
No TNC.
Although they use ladders.
Well,
they
use
chairs.
Yeah.
And they use tables.
Tables are always involved.
And they use ladders. But then, so then going into this one, though, Edge and Christian were the tag champs, and they had developed, like, a personality as being these asshole heels, and... they started using chairs on everyone. Like, they had...
their all chairs all the time?
Yeah. Their big move was they'd swing chairs at someone at the same time. Like, sandwich a guy with a chair shot. Ugh. With two chair shots. Actually, it was kind of good because they'd kind of, like, meet the chairs behind the guy. And
it
wouldn't be that much of an impact, really. It was called a concerto.
Ah, that's pretty clever.
I'm sure the band and you, exactly, the band nerd and you would like that.
I did.
So, there was their thing.
It's pretty highbrow for wrestling.
Yeah. Well, wrestling fans probably didn't get it. tables were the Dudley's weapon du jour, and the Hardy Boys were the masters of the ladder match.
It's like a game of Clue.
Yeah, so...
is there a wrestling-themed Clue?
Not really. There might have been one released in, like, 2000 or something,
I think that's big I
don't know.
Is there a wrestling Monopoly?
There,
I think there's everything has like their own Monopoly version.
The best WWF game came out in like the 80s when, I don't know if you remember this craze, like there was a lot of like VHS board games.
Oh, yeah.
Where like you'd hit play,
you'd
get a blue card and
you'd have to fast forward.
Yeah, you'd fast forward and it was like if you were the blue guy, you move forward five spaces, and if you were the blue guy or the red guy, you fell back five spaces.
Yep.
And you always wanted to be whoever Hulk Hogan was, because the whole tape is basically Hulk Hogan winning. So if you didn't have that color, you were screwed, basically.
I gotcha. Well, no, I just think we just said like they each had a weapon of choice without a clue.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
Rooms. You could be like Jeff Hardy with the table.
How are you gonna kill someone with a table? It's going to take a lot of time. But anyways, so Mick Foley was the commissioner in charge at the time, and he decided to make this match because he, like, joked around with Edge and Christian a lot. He was kind of like, but he was always kind of, like, sick of their shit also. So he kind of made this match to kind of put them in their place, and everyone assumed they were going to lose this because how could they possibly win?
Ah. But, ooh, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
They did win.
They did.
Yeah.
Just by outlasting the other two teams, I would say.
That is true, actually. No, I thought it was entertaining. So, because I had thought about this about the time. So, obviously, the ladders are real. The yes. chairs are real. The tables, though, are those like some sort of flimsy, like, half-ass tables? Or like the screws loosened?
They're lesser tables than you would buy.
Right.
I mean, it's still real wood.
I mean, it's obviously still a table, but like wood could be like balsa wood.
Yeah, right? I think it's basically balsa wood tables for the most part. But, okay. I mean, or maybe like if balsa's like 0.1,
like, right, like the next
I think this
one
is like 0.3 maybe composite, because like they use it a lot of times like to actually break the fall.
Like
Jeff Hardy does his Swanton bomb off of a 20-foot ladder, which is crazy regardless of what he's falling onto.
Right.
But falling onto a ladder is better than falling onto the concrete.
Exactly. Ground. That takes some guts, man. That's what I said. Yes. I said that big ladder is no joke, and I can't believe the way he was doing those moves off of that.
Yes.
So I think you said he had a lot of addiction
problems. Yes, he has a lot of addiction problems kind of to this day. And I mean, but he's still wrestling. I don't know if it's good or bad, but at least he's cleaned up a lot.
Okay.
At least. He had a DUI a few months ago. But I mean, that's still better than like crystal meth.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. We don't have to get into the nuance.
There was one WWE interview where he came back and he was talking about like how he was in crystal meth all the time. And that went up on the website for like 4 hours. Yikes. I remember reading it.
Really?
And then like 2 hours later, this was like 2006.
Oh, okay.
And then like 2 hours later, that was
scrubbed
from the website. They were like, we probably shouldn't have a guy admitting that, like right after a guy killed his wife and son and himself.
Well, that's the other thing too. Watching the headshots was really painful.
Yeah, there's a lot of
there's a lot in this that didn't really age well.
Yeah,
like Jeff Hardy's facial hair did not
age well. Yeah, his facial hair and his hair dye.
Yeah, his whole look.
Just really the Hardy's look in general. Even Matt, his black hair with the blonde highlights and
what Seth Rollins has.
Yeah, but he doesn't like, at least he just has one streak. Matt Hardy kind of had it both ends of the hair, and it's just not a good look. And the Junko jeans.
Did everybody at your high school have the frosted tips at a certain?
No, there was only a couple people that had it, and then the one guy did it, and it was then banned. So he came in the next day with completely bleached hair. And then I never saw him again. So there's rumors he was expelled.
For bleaching your hair.
There's rumors he was leaving anyways and just decided to take a stand to the man. We'll never know.
Yeah. There was a lot of, both boys and girls at my high school did a lot of the frosted tips.
Yeah, frosted tips was big,
It wasn't really a flattering look on anybody.
I don't think, I think everyone would agree that aged poorly. Totally. Including Michael Cole, who was big on that in the early 2000s. And it's not a good look.
Yeah. But fashion choices aside, I mean, there were shenanigans in this one, too, because it's Attitude Era. You know, Lita runs out, and she interferes, and she gets hit by, I can't remember, was Edge or
Christian. Edge, and right away, JR calls him that dirty son of a bitch. Because she takes a hard spare.
It was a pretty, it was not a light hit, by any means.
To a spoiler alert, it's not the hardest spare she'd ever take by Edge is for personal reasons. Oh. If you catch my drift.
I think I'm getting you.
Yeah. So
I got it. And I also thought it was kind of crazy that they were like hanging. Well, it didn't really make a lot of, well, once again, don't think too hard, but at first two of them were hanging from the belt.
Devon and I believe Jeff Hardy are
almost
hanging
like,
from the belt.
Yeah.
Well, hanging from the apparatus.
Okay. That that was how it was supporting their weight. Cause then, about 2 minutes later, they just pull and yank him right off. So
right.
I guess now that you say they're hanging from the apparatus, it's like the chicken fights. What was that called? Yeah.
No, yeah, chicken fight. Yeah, because I think this is really the first time they did that where they actually, well, because for one thing, there's two of them. So they can't just yank at the belt because you have to have both belts in possession.
Gotcha.
So they're both at the top and they know that they can't beat the other guy. So they just hold on to one and then.
Defensive move. Yeah.
But then. I think it's Jeff Hart, or no, Devon gets kicked off by Jeff, and then Edge and Christian throw the ladder at Jeff.
Right.
And then just
and then they pretty much win.
Yeah, there's the, it's kind of at the point.
It was a little anticlimactic.
It is kind of they outlasted everyone. They took everyone out. They didn't take any big risk. I think it's kind of like the point of it. Like they played the game the right way and are able to just climb up and win it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, if that's the name of the game.
Yep.
There you go.
So this is another 9.5 for me.
Okay.
I'm going to put it probably like, I'd say 30 to 50.
Okay. Are we going to watch any matches that aren't, they'll end up not on your list? Just curious.
A couple.
Okay.
Maybe the next match, actually, that we talk
about. Oh.
Actually, maybe the next two matches.
Okay.
But, no, I think this one is probably like 30 to 50. It's kind of, it's very good, but again, this is the one that kind of suffers from what comes after it, because the next match that we'll watch later.
Okay, yeah, I mean, in general, it seems like, do you think these are less, these are inferior to the WrestleMania
matches? I don't think they're really inferior.
I don't know if that's the right word.
I think it's just that because they came first, they were able to build off of them.
Gotcha. That's fair.
It's not,
yeah. They serve a purpose.
It's not bad. It's not a knock really against them.
Right. It's a means to an end.
Right. It's just saying that something better came after them. Like, you know, it's kind of, it's not a knock against them. It's just saying more better stuff came after you.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. Next, we move all the way to SummerSlam 2008. August 17, 2008, at the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. And we have Dave Bautista against John Cena. It goes 14 minutes, 10 seconds, and Bautista wins clean over John Cena.
Hits him no shenanigans.
A Bautista bomb for the win.
Just two really juiced up guys.
Yep. So that's basically was the story of the match. Like, from 2005 at WrestleMania 21, John Cena wins the SmackDown World title. Batista wins the Raw title. Eventually, later that year, in the draft, they get switched to the other show. Okay. So Batista goes to SmackDown, Cena goes to Raw. So they never interact with each other. And for a while, they were kind of like the biggest guy on their show. Going against each other, but never. And then in 08, Batista gets drafted to Raw. And they kind of just decide, let's have this match to see who, even though CM Punk was actually the champ on Raw, he was facing, so there was I think it was triple threat match, JBL, Bradshaw.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, just making sure. Versus Cena versus Batista, and Cena hits Batista, like, by accident or whatever.
Wah, 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 wah.
And JBL ends up winning. So then that's the title. That's actually the title match at SummerSlam, JBL versus CM Punk. CM Punk wins. But the, like, real match for Raw was Cena versus Batista.
Gotcha.
And that's this match.
Yeah. No, I said they're, you know, good rhythm. I said they're both, you know, like body type. They're both, you know, used to the gills.
Yes.
John Cena was, you know, a little dramatic. He was kind of like AC Slater in his acting ability.
Yes.
You know, like overacting.
He's gotten better.
He has. Yes. He has. I don't know if AC Mario Lopez ever got better.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Okay. Is he going to be in the reboot?
Yes.
Really?
The reboot is supposedly just him and Jesse Spano.
Wait,
and they just make mention of Zach Morris being the governor of California, but Mark Paul Gosselaar is not involved.
He's the one, no part of that.
No, he said he was not asked, not invited.
Oh, wow, huh?
So I don't know.
No, I thought it was fine. That one little move, the switcheroo, where Batista basically like lifted him up. No, John Cena.
Yeah, I think Batista goes for a little power slam.
They do like a little
Cena
switcheroo.
Reverses him into the FU.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Yes. I think just anytime you see John Cena do something strong is insane, because he never half-ass. It's never like
that's true.
A gimmick. Like, he is that strong and does that for real. Is Superman.
Yes.
Yes. And actually this match ended up being, I'm not sure if it was the cause of or if it was just a culmination of injuries. John Cena ended up having a broken neck.
Oh.
And as you do most times with a broken neck, you take off. How long would you think?
Like realistically, like a normal person, I think would take like 6 months off. He probably took like 6 days off.
Oh, he took three. Well, normally in wrestling, you take about a year off.
Okay.
For a broken neck. He took 3 months off, obviously, because John Cena is Wolverine and has super healing skills.
Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what he did. And he comes back in Survivor Series, actually, and wins the title.
Wow. And did he no long-term damage because of that? Or did he?
He's always had like, no, not really. All of his injuries, he's always come back really quick. And I mean, maybe he has nagging injuries now, and that's why he shifted. I mean, this was 08, and really he didn't shift to acting more to like 2016. So
right.
I don't think it was really...
wasn't bothering him.
Yeah, obviously he was okay for quite a while afterwards.
Right.
And, yeah, I like this match a lot. It's just, it's kind of one of those matches where they just have, it's good sometimes when you just have characters with established beats, like, this is a Superman versus Batman match, and
right.
Who's going to hit the big, and they just, it's 14 minutes, but it's big blow, big blow, big right. blow. It's not, yeah. there's not, like, holding the chin lock for 10 minutes. And
well, there was that one time where he was holding the chin lock.
Yeah, he does hold the chin
lock. Tear it poorly, very poorly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's John Cena's, that's one of his finishers, is his submission move, the STFU.
Oh.
It's an STF.
Got it.
He calls it FU because he's John Cena. And yeah, it's supposed to be a crossover, toehold step over face lock, but yeah, he never really got how you're supposed to lock the face, and we just put his hands on the ground. But yeah, but overall, it's not, even that is a finishing move though, so.
Gotcha.
At the moment, you thought that could end the match, because he had won two previous WrestleMania matches against Shawn Michaels and John Cena with that, or Triple H with that move.
Okay.
So it was a big time.
And he sells it.
Yeah.
He tries. He sells it.
Yeah. Pretends like he's hurting.
It's like barely touching.
Yes.
Whatever.
But then, yeah. And then John Cena goes for his diving leg drop and Batista catches him for a power bomb. Gets two. And then it's just like he pissed Batista off because Batista just picks him up and power bombs him to hell.
Basically. Yeah. And that's another
show. That was a stiff shot. Yeah.
For sure.
And wins. And any
I had a toddler jumping all over me pretty much all day.
He was rough on you.
When I was trying to research, the only thing that they're renovating it. So as a result of that, earlier this year, April 2019, but due to that renovation, the Pacers have committed to staying there another 25 years.
Oh, wow.
So if you're a big Pacers fan, they're not going anywhere.
You could catch them at the Conseco Field.
Yep, for a long time. Well, it has a different name now.
Oh.
Bankers Life Fieldhouse, course, because names change all the time.
Obviously.
It hosted, there's a section on their Wikipedia article called Auto Racing. It talks about how in 2015, the Fieldhouse hosted the Indy Invitational with midget car racing.
Ooh.
An outlaw cart racing on a dirt track. So midget car racing, what do you think that means?
I would hope it's midgets driving cars. Or midgets driving small cars.
best case.
Yes. Little people.
Little people driving
little cars.
Well, now I think like the little people that our son has, like the Fisher Price little.
Yes. Well, that could also
happen. It's lame because I really don't know either. I think it's most likely probably normal sized people driving little cars.
Oh, that's so fun.
Well, I don't know.
Like smart cars?
Yeah, it almost looks like, what do those look like?
Yeah.
It's like for ATV.
ATVs.
It's also, they're called speed. Fun. Yeah, they're called speed cars in Australia. So, okay. That's what I just was curious when I saw midget car racing. I was like, what do we think that means?
Yeah.
What do we want it to mean?
Yeah, what I want it to mean is different from what it means, apparently.
Right. That's about it. Also, like the Raleigh-Durham Sports Center, pretty nondescript. Yes. And to be fair, actually, that's not true. I was going to say some of the older arenas, obviously just because they've been around longer, have more history. But the Air Canada Center was 1997, and they have a story. Okay. So
moving on to the
Air Canada good Center. Segue, yeah.
Our last match, Survivor Series 2016. It is November 20th.
Oh, wait, what, were you reading that one? Is that one not on your list?
Oh, yeah. John Cena versus Batista. Yeah, I probably would give it an 8.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's just a little below my list, probably 150 area.
Okay.
I, like, a good, very good match, but it just, it's not,
not rising to
it
the
didn't
top.
Quite, I think there's just not enough of a story of the match itself. It just kind of boom, boom, done. Also, like, the quick ending, kind of. Like, it just kind of, Batista hits the one powerbomb, and then he just picks him up, hits the other powerbomb.
Yeah, that's over.
And then right. It's over.
There's not a lot of kickouts, from what I remember. There's some, yeah, but, yeah.
Right.
Okay, so next to the shortest match.
So, the shortest match, yeah, and no kickouts in this one whatsoever.
Nope. Well, it, how long was it?
It is a minute 26.
Well, yeah.
Can you name, there are four moves in it. One of them is repeated twice.
Oh, I knew at the time as they said it, obviously, but...
Or at least describe it.
So it's like a, it looks like a spear.
Yeah.
It's like a Roman Reigns type spear.
Yeah, it's just, a, it is oh, the Goldberg okay. spear. He does it twice.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the finisher.
Yes, the finisher, which is the jackhammer.
And then there's the sun.
And then, well, yes, then there's Goldberg bringing his shirtless son into the ring to celebrate.
Right.
So, yes, this is the main event from the 2016 Survivor Series. After the previous match went 52 minutes and 55
Wait,
seconds.
Wait, really?
It was a 5-on-5 Survivor Whoa. Series match, so single elimination.
Gotcha.
Everyone gets eliminated.
So they're ready for a quick
yeah,
match.
So,
like in the, going to the bathroom or going to concessions.
Well, yeah. I don't think so, because that was the semi-main event. So this was the main event. So people oh. were probably still ready. And actually... The video package was kind of long, so it, you probably could have been able to...
The video package is longer than the match.
Oh, yeah, and the entrances were longer than the match, yeah. So, yeah, but what did you think?
Oh, well, I think I said to you right before the match, Brock Lesnar always wins, and here yep. we go again. And so I was pleasantly surprised yeah. to see a quick ass-kicking.
Yes, by Goldberg. By well, not Brock Lesnar.
Exactly, yeah, I like to see Brock Lesnar get his ass kicked for a change. That doesn't yes. happen too often. So, yeah, I mean, I just did expect, I think you said, hey, let's just watch one more match tonight. And,
right.
So I knew it was going to be short, but I did not think it was going to be...
A minute 26 86, seconds.
Like 86 seconds yes. long. So, no, that was, I said, a quick ass kicking. Goldberg, and like you said, Goldberg kind of has his moment. Like, his was his return.
Right.
Made a big yeah. deal about that. I'm guessing that the WrestleMania match is going to be much longer, and... I'm guessing Brock Lesnar's going to win because he always wins.
He always does win.
So. Especially at WrestleMania. So.
Yes.
He beat The Undertaker for crying out loud.
I know. I was there.
I know you were there.
So, Lesnar and Goldberg, their whole thing, like when Goldberg came into the WWF in 2003, everyone kind of knew it was just to fight Brock Lesnar eventually. Mm. And he fought him at WrestleMania 20, and it was horrible, horrible, horrible on so many levels because... Everyone knew it was Goldberg's last match. His contract was up, and he had, like, already said he wasn't going to resign. The week before WrestleMania, word had come out that Brock Lesnar had opted out of his contract because he wanted to go play pro football.
Brock Lesnar?
Yes.
Really?
He tried out for the Vikings and ended up making it to the last cuts, which is impressive for someone who hadn't played since college, or since high school.
Wow. Yeah, just...
But, so that match just, it was in Madison Square Garden also, which is, like, always the most smarkiest... fans you could wrestle in front of. So they're all chanting, "You sold out."
Oh.
Steve Austin's a guest referee. They chant for him. They start chanting for Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage,
like
Virgil.
Positive?
Like, we want Virgil.
Oh.
Like, the Million Dollar Man.
That's a pretty...
Manservant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was...
It's a low blow.
It was like
two.
One of the worst matches in WrestleMania history just because they had no idea how to react to it all. So they're like both frozen. So it's a horrible match. So then this was like the make good for it. And I don't remember if you, I don't know if you remember this. At SummerSlam that year, 2016, they showed the video game commercial. And that's Goldberg's first appearance in the WWF.
Oh,
in
kind
years.
Of.
And
yeah.
everyone was chanting Goldberg.
Yeah, that's right.
So then when he kills Randy Orton in the middle of the ring, a lot of people, myself included, thought they were going to hit Goldberg's music and have him come out.
But that's right.
Instead, we have someone much more important, Shane McMahon, come out and just get
sick of him.
Killed for no reason. And that never. Luckily, they never broke a Brock match on wasted a Brock match on Shane McMahon. But
right, yeah.
But anyway, so then they kind of did this weird where Brock Lesnar, or Bill Goldberg came out just to promote the video game and was like, yeah, I'm going to fight one more time, and it's you, Bill Goldberg, or it's you, Brock Lesnar. But it ended up being a very memorable match.
Yep. Oh, it's, yeah. I mean, there was not a second to spare.
Exactly, so. Yeah. Brock Lesnar pushes Goldberg into the ring, like into the corner.
And he comes back.
Goldberg comes back and pushes him hard down and then hits two spears in the jackhammer, and that's it.
Yep, pretty much sums it up.
So this didn't rate on my top 100. I don't really even rate it. Because it's kind of...
It's more like an interlude more than a match.
Yeah, exactly. It's how do you rate a minute and a half match? I mean...
Right.
It got what it wanted to happen over, but nothing really to rank it there.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I thought of something that I read about the Indianapolis place a little earlier. It was where the Shield debuted. And also where they broke
Survivor
up
Series.
And where they got back together.
Really?
Oh, and yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
Ah.
Well, that makes sense because they broke up the night after a pay-per-view in Chicago. So it makes sense that Indianapolis would be the next stop.
Yeah, I must have skipped by them. Got too hung up on the midget car racing that I forgot to mention that fact. Oh, yeah, but the...
No, I think, yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, so the Field House is notable because it was the landmark moments, many landmark moments of the Shield. Their debut, when they broke up. And the reunion.
Oh, which, so, does it say which reunion? Because they reunited a few times.
It says the October 8th, 2017.
Okay, so the Raw, where they like kind of all came out together to
I
their
guess
music,
so.
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. Good. And, but
yeah,
for the Air Canada Center?
Yeah,
and,
so I had to rehearse.
And tie it into the Maple
I know,
Leaf
I had
Gardens.
To rehearse this story for you because it got a little convoluted. And, you know, these people who write these articles aren't necessarily professionals.
Well, they're all very passionate, though.
Right, so the Air Canada Center was originally conceived as to be just the basketball arena for the Toronto Raptors when they were granted a franchise.
So the mid-90s?
Yep, they broke ground in 1997.
Okay.
Same time, the owners of Maple Leaf Gardens, which was the hallowed, you know, church of hockey where
the Maple Leafs
played, that was getting a little aged. The kind of ownership conglomerate that owned Maple Leaf Gardens, they wanted a new arena, and they also were a little sore that they did not get the franchise built, or they didn't get the franchise for the Raptors.
Okay.
So they wanted a new arena, so they decided to be, you know, passive-aggressive as hell, and decide that they wanted to build their new hockey arena right next door to Air Canada.
Okay.
And, like I said, this does not make the Ribosomes happy.
No, it does not.
And basically it ends, like most corporate fight-outs do, with the Madison Maple Leaf Garden Group just simply buying out the Raptors.
Much more money than you, and
exactly.
We're going to do what we want.
Right. So instead of building the kind of dueling arenas, they end up retrofitting Air Canada so it can accommodate both hockey and not just basketball, just basketball and hockey.
Well, that's kind of interesting because the Barclays Arena.
Oh, yeah.
That was built by Jay-Z, and it was built
for both.
With the Nets in mind, and then they tried to retrofit it for the Long Island Islanders.
Oh. Yeah, we talked about
that. But it was so badly.
Yeah.
It was horrible arena for hockey that they only played like half a season there and then went back to, I think, the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island.
Right. And then, like, as a follow-up to that, so once they merged, they needed to figure out what they were going to do with the old Maple Leaf Garden.
Right.
And that same ownership group said, okay, we'll sell it on the condition that whoever we sell it to does not use it as an arena. So they went from having to have two arenas right next to each other to basically saying we don't want any competition.
Obviously.
Yep. So it got converted, the Maple Leaf Garden. It's a historic landmark. It's a national landmark in Canada. But they sold the first floor.
So there's always a Mountie standing over just to make sure nothing happens.
I assume so. I think that's what it means in Canada. But they sold it to the largest Canadian grocer, which for any Arrested Development fans out there, you'll appreciate that the name of this grocery store chain is Loblaws.
Yeah.
Loblaws.
Bob Loblaws.
Loblog. Like I said, yes. I assume that Scott Bayo was their spokesperson.
Obviously.
I had to read that a couple times too. But I thought that was an interesting kind of fate for the Maple Leaf Garden.
Yes. The hallowed ground of many wrestling matches is now a grocery store.
Well, it's like a mixed-use thing. They have a small arena in there, but I think it's like like a 3,000 seater.
Well, it can't be for sports though, right?
They might have kind of relaxed that over time. I mean, it's a big building. You can't have a grocery store that's the size of a hockey arena, let's be honest.
True.
So
I hope they still have the little rampway.
I hope
the rampway goes to like the produce line or something, because that ramp is that should be part of the historical.
I think the ramp specifically is landmark.
It should be. I mean, that's just such a great little addition. Like that was.
It was so weird.
Because like primetime wrestling, like I said, that was kind of like the wrap up show, but they'd also have like exclusives to primetime. Anytime you saw that, you knew, oh, this is from Maple Leafs. And you could tell Boston Garden. You could tell Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was always
iconic. I wonder, I didn't mention it, but I wonder if Maple Leaf Garden is one of the gardens that the Bucks are developer. Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, 1931. And he developed,
they were all
in the late 20s.
All around the same time, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
I would put some heavy money on that.
I don't think we're going to get any, like, angry fan letters.
Yeah, well, there might be some very adamant Maple Leaf Garden fans who maybe their grandfather.
They can tweet at Place to Be Nation.
Tweet at Place to Be Nation, and I'm sure it'll get back to us somehow. Anyways.
Okay,
so actually, last week I forgot to ask you. So your highest rated match last week was Triple H versus Cactus Jack.
Oh, yeah.
And your highest rated match the week before was the Revival versus DIY.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one, too.
So, out of those two, which would you rank? What is your favorite match you've seen so
goodness.
Far out of those two?
I like the Revival DIY, I want to say. That's just my gut
instinct. That makes sense. All right, so now going to this week, we have six matches. How would you rank them from, let's go bottom up?
Well, I think I'm going to put the 86 second match last.
Yeah,
because I think we have to just throw that one out, to be
honest.
Right,
yeah. I mean, yeah, really, that's not a ranking match. It's just, it's kind of to build to what we have coming.
Yeah. I mean, I probably got to just spend a little bit more time, like, getting my exact numbers, but I would say near the top. Well, I think that, okay, we're near the bottom. So the ones that kind of, like, lingered in the bottom for me is the Steve Austin versus The Rock one, just because it's too much.
Yes, it could be overwhelming.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
And then I think maybe you're just coloring my opinion, but the John Cena Batista one, I also didn't really get a lot of, like,
right, yeah,
exciting. I didn't get excited about those two. So those kind of go in the bottom. In the middle, I would say, is the... I don't know why I'm liking all these table letter chairs matches, but I feel like I would put TLC slightly. I don't know. No, I think I would put the Macho Man, Maple Leaf Garden one slightly ahead of the TLC 2000. I think after seeing everything we watched, I think the Bret Hart Steve Austin one has been my favorite of this week. Yeah, so I'll just put that at number one. I'll put TLC at number two, Macho Man Ricky Steamboat number three, Cena Batista number four. And
Austin,
I guess, yeah. Austin Rock, you feel like that has to be, like I said, that's the power couple. But that one,
yeah, but I mean,
guessing, and I'm also going to guess, go ahead and guess, that they had better matches between each other.
They did.
So
yes.
I actually feel comfortable putting that last.
And they had a lot of matches also. So it's not like you're disrespecting.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay. And would you, so your top match is Austin versus Brett. Is that better than DIY versus the Revival?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it might be.
Okay. All right. No, there's a lot of people that would agree with you.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people that would disagree with you.
Well, I'm not going to, and I don't have like a reasoned out defense, as you can tell by my tone there. But, and maybe we have, at the end, we just need to, after a couple of weeks, we'll probably need to rewatch all my top ones and see.
Okay, yeah, we'll.
Got to reassess.
We'll get to that, yeah.
Maybe, you know, all that free time.
Our year-end episode.
Maybe, yeah, maybe over Christmas break.
Yeah, I think that'd be
you're off
good
and
time
I'm
to
off from work.
Look over your top picks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could just pick your top match from each show and kind of
look like at
that.
Like a supercut.
Yeah. Yep. We'll also pick, like, top matches on mine that we didn't get to. And
oh, okay.
Well, I have quite a few minutes.
I'm sure you have it all worked out. All right. But okay.
But speaking of things that are planned out, next week we'll watch all these matches again.
So it's going to be 6 matches next week.
6 matches next week, yes.
Okay.
Don't worry, there's one that's...
Very short?
Pretty shorter.
Okay.
Shorter. And yeah, but... So yeah, so all these matches we watch, we're going to watch them again. Different circumstances, obviously.
Yeah.
We're going to watch the main event of them, the WrestleMania match. So most of them are the next year. The Austin Rock is 2 years later.
Okay, so it's all pretty much on the heels of the matches we watched this week.
Most of them, okay. Yeah.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wingbar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.